I've been in student government for a really long time, and I have so much respect for what the position is and does, and I just want to use, I guess, the skills that I have to best serve others, and student government's always been that place for me.
As for me, I'm running for the people that don't think they can run for student body president or vice president. Too long, the communities that I've been a part of don't feel like these spaces are meant for them, and I want to make sure that they have a voice at the table, not just for right now, but for the future generations of Longhorns.
Do you remember back in 2016 when there was a very intense election that was fraught with conflict and rumors? I'm not talking about the presidential election between Trump and Clinton. I'm talking about the 2016 UT student body presidential election. Today, I'm here with candidate Kaylin Dimitroff, who's going to talk with me today about what happened. So, welcome to my show, Kaylin.
Hey, Paige. So happy to be on today. And it's just great to see you and your cute dog, Wilbur.
So, before we begin any conversation, let's set the stage for my listeners. Kaylin, what is student government? Why would anyone want to get involved in it? Tell me.
Well, Paige, I have to start with a little bit of self-awareness, which is I do feel like I'm talking about high school sports or something right now. But what student government was, it was a legislative body that had a speaker and parliamentary rules. There was sort of an agency component that would handle programming. And then there was also a judicial branch, the Student Supreme Court, very austere institution. That's a little bit of a joke, but it was great. And I think why anyone would want to be involved in it. I mean, I think there's like two reasons, right? The first is the answer. Probably everyone, including me, would have given you, which is, you know, it's nice to be involved in campus, the community, to be in the discussions about issues facing students, making a difference in that way. But I think now, looking back on it all about 10 years later, it's like there's also sort of a vanity element of it. I think it was a good way to know people and be known. And I don't know, I always really liked people, especially all of our classmates at UT. And I was always happy to be out there in the mix of things and getting to know people. So I would say those were sort of the reasons and what it is. Does that answer the question?
I have so much respect for the position. A lot of people don't really know what student government president and vice president do, and I think if they did, maybe more people would vote. Basically, you sit on the president's student advisory council, faculty council, and every council down to library council, and you are the student voice. I have so much respect for the position. A lot of people don't really know what student government president and vice president do, and I think if they did, maybe more people would vote. Basically, you sit on the president's student advisory council, faculty council, and every council down to library council, and you are the student voice.
So just tell me your story. Why did you get involved in student government? What motivated you, and how long were you in it before you ran for UT student body president?
So I got involved because there was a guy named Corey Rady, who eventually became student body president, that had gone to high school with me, and he told me I should run for first year representative, which is basically like first year class president. And I told him absolutely not. I just got here. I don't really want to put myself out there in that way. And he encouraged me to run, was like, I won that race last year. I'll show you what to do. You won't lose, I promise. And he's a very persuasive guy. I think he's an attorney now. And he talked me into it. So that was why I got involved.
What other positions did you have? And also, what was your experience being in student body government for the first few years? What was that like?
I was first year representative, which is basically just like freshman class president. And then after that, I represented the College of Liberal Arts. And then I was one of 8 university-wide representatives. And I had such a great experience. I loved campaigning. I worked in campaigns after college and just had the best time doing that. And I also really loved the policymaking. I think it's so energizing to start from nothing and work together with other people to come up with a solution to a problem. And especially, you know, as a young person, being 18, 19, 20, to have some license in the world was very exciting. And I just thought the other people in student government were really great and fun to work with, and I learned a lot from them. So yeah, it had been a really good experience, and I felt like I knew the ways that students could make a difference and where the limitations were, but overall, I just had a really great time.
So why did you decide to run for UT student body president, and what went down during that election? I mean, I was just an undergraduate and I was not involved in politics. But I remember there was some interesting stuff that I saw in the newspaper and overheard in classrooms during that election. Tell me all about it.
I don't think that your podcast listeners are ready for a 6-hour screed about everything that happened. The top line points. Basically, in 2016, I was running for student body president. Why was I doing that? Straight up, I just thought I would do a good job. I had been in student government for a really long time. I think to the extent I was, you know, good at it or whatever, I think I really did have a good sense of what levers could be pulled to accomplish things. And I thought it would be fun. And it was just a job I wanted and I thought I would be great at. So that was why I ran. And what went down during the election? Well, Paige, as you kind of indicated, it was a disaster. Basically, during the first election, there were a bunch of allegations of rule violations. So that was everything from early campaigning to people complaining about misrepresentations on financial disclosures and endorsement forms. I mean, it was very messy and litigious. And so actually, we held the first election. So normally student government presidential elections were 2 weeks long. So we held the whole thing and it had just been everybody in student court back and forth over and over that they actually invalidated the presidential results from that election because they just thought it had been too messed up.
Due to the pending actions on part of the Student Government Assembly, the results of the Student Government Executive Alliance election cannot be certified. The outcome of this race will depend on resolution of the Assembly's due process. Student government is a key element of a shared governance for our campus. We must respect the organization's process as part of their role and responsibility to our students.
Basically, there was two deciding bodies on the rule violation. The first was the Election Supervisory Board, but their decisions were subject to review by the UT Supreme Court that I mentioned earlier. And basically what happened was is the Election Supervisory Board would make these preliminary decisions based on the election code, and the Supreme Court kept reversing them, which was causing a lot of confusion. And basically they had a law professor from the law school look over all of the decisions, and they decided that the two bodies had come to such different conclusions that they decided to invalidate the election.
This election has been a mess, and it's as Alex said, it's unprecedented. So the one thing that's certain about all this is that it's been a waste of everyone's time.
It was stated on Thursday evening, results could not be certified because of procedural irregularities and questions of due process.
I think that since that delay has been announced, we have received little to no communication from the Office of the Dean of Students. It's great that we as candidates are being more informed of what's going on, but I haven't been able to have a conversation since Thursday that doesn't start with, hey, what's going on? My response is, your guess is as good as mine. So I would love to see the Office of the Dean of Students release some sort of statement that very clearly defines for the student body what has happened and what steps are being taken to move forward from here.
Now that the court has one member and you have entered the reign of the Durrani court, as the great Kanye West once said, no one man should have all that power. So I don't know what's going to happen. It's literally just me.
We had to have another election for just the student body president position. So we have a second election entirely, and that election ended up going to a runoff.
Candidates, thank you. I know that this has been especially hard on all of you because, you know, you gave everything you had to give at the beginning, and then we asked you to give a whole lot more. There will be a runoff. The candidates who are in the runoff are the executive alliances of Kevin Helgren and Dina Kim, and Kalen Dimitrov and Jesse Guadiana. With 2,385 votes, 35.77% of total votes cast, that's Kevin Helgren and Dina Kim, 1,933 votes, 28.99% of vote cast for Kalen Dimitroff and Jesse Guadiana. This is the timeline for a runoff election. Voting will begin 8 a.m. next Wednesday and conclude at 5 p.m. next Thursday.
Throughout the second election, there were still tons of student court things going on. But in the end, in our runoff, about 13,000 people voted, which is more than I think in the state house race that year. And my team ended up losing by less than 150 votes, like something like 0.002%. So it was a very close runoff in just, I guess, all the while there's all these rule violations, the school paper, the school alt-weekly paper are reporting on all of it. And it was just really long and taxing. It's so funny to think back on it now, but it was such a mess.
Kaylin, we're drinking lattes. Do you want some alcohol? Do you want wine? Do you want a spirit? I can make you some right now. Do you want a cocktail? Kaylin and Nut are back. We have wine. All right, great. Okay, so rule violations. What rules were you accused of violating?
Oh my gosh, I don't know that I fully remember, but there was this excellent photo of me. There was this rule that whenever there was a case or a hearing, there had to be a public posting of it, and it would be posted on the student government office's glass doors. And there was one point where there were like 18 different notices, and I took a picture in front of it. I'm like so tired. I look horrible, but just like hook 'em, biggest smile, because I was like, this is amazing. I have 18 rule violations, apparently. My favorite one, though, was we had these costumes we would wear when we were doing flyering. So we would hand out flyers to students, you know, with our platform points asking for their votes. And I find that to be generally tedious. So I was like, you know, it would be very fun is if we did that in funny costumes. And that way, at least maybe people would be slightly less annoyed that we were handing them a piece of paper they surely didn't want. And I had this chili pepper costume that was tremendous. I loved it. And I remember one team filed a complaint that we had not listed the costumes on our financial disclosures. And so at the hearing on that complaint, I wore the pepper costume to the hearing. And I was like, look, this is just clothing I wear. I just have this in my closet. I didn't buy it for the race, which was true. It was just a costume that I had. But it was, I mean, people were being really myopic about the things that they claimed we were doing, and surely we were also filing complaints. I mean, we were all very serious at the time, but looking back on it, it was all pretty funny.
Who threw the first stone, the first ball, the first like tennis ball across the court of rule violations? Do you remember? Is it you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, it was definitely us. We filed the first complaint. We definitely threw the first punch. It was us. Got to take accountability. But basically, I think the main thing we were complaining of was that one of the other teams was doing a lot of early campaigning. And basically, there was this really strong prohibition against early campaigning because they didn't want to make it so that students couldn't access the campaigning period. If folks had been campaigning all year round, then it would make it basically so that, you know, if a student decided to run late, they would be at an unfair advantage. So the school was really strict about keeping the campaigning to a 2-week period. Other than that, all you were supposed to be able to do was recruit people to be on your campaign team. But one of the other teams was like, well, our campaign team just happens to have like 200, 300 people on it. And so they were doing all these meetings saying, you know, we're just getting people on our campaign team. But we thought it was this effort of early campaigning that was giving them an unfair advantage and making us have to also engage in kind of a more, I suppose, intense effort ahead of time, which we didn't want to do because outside of being student government lords, we were also just normal students with class schedules and very important things to do, like drinking beer at parties. So that was our main issue. And again, a little bit of self-awareness. I do still feel like I'm talking about high school sports or something. I'm like, oh, back in the day, it was terrible. But yeah, that was what I remember our main issue was. And then to be totally fair to this other team, I think they felt like, well, we're doing a really good job and they're just mad about it and they're filing these complaints because they think we're going to win and they just want to try to knock us out. And that was how the whole thing got framed. But really, at least from our perspective, it was more like, oh, we're at this disadvantage because you did something that violated the rules. But it's not necessarily the coolest position ever to be like, excuse me, you were breaking your rules. A little bit narkish. So all this is very silly, but those were the competing narratives around the rule violations. And then once we had filed our complaint, we started getting counter complaints and the whole thing snowballed from there. So I don't think anybody was above blame for the rule violation craziness.
Well, that sounds like an actual rule they were violating. I remember I was not involved at all in student politics, but early campaigning or campaigning outside of the season, I do remember there was a student body presidential campaign that got suspended at some point when I was at UT because of that. Everyone was really angry. I forget what, it was like their Greek life one got suspended. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I just remember that was a serious rule violation. Way more serious than wearing a cute costume that you already own to attract votes. What the heck? So they just keep throwing rule violations at you. You had a bunch. Were any of them, do you feel like, actually serious? Were there any that warranted being brought in front of a judiciary committee?
I think there were maybe one or two that were fair. For instance, we had an endorsement form for a student organization, the University Democrats, and it's really funny. Now, I can't speak to my political affiliations because of my job, but I have a lot of experience in campaigning and with voting and things like that. But one of our campaign team members filled out the endorsement form for that organization for us and made a representation that we had voted, me and my running mate, when I say we, that's what I mean, I had voted in the primaries that year in the Democratic primaries. Well, in fact, the primaries were still ongoing and we hadn't voted yet. And so one of the members of the University Democrats pulled our voting records and saw that we hadn't voted yet. So they filed a complaint suggesting that we were being untruthful. And that really wasn't the intention. That complaint was withdrawn and everything was fine. But I do think that was fair insofar as it's like, you do want to be transparent and honest and things like that. And I think it is still on us that we didn't look over that more carefully when there were affirmative representations about us being made. Definitely wasn't malicious, issued a correction, but I do think that complaint was fair.
Whoever that was, the University Democrats person that reported Kaylin and her running mate, I hope you have had a very successful career as a parking violation meter ticketing person. Feels like that would be a good job for you. So you and your running mate were accused of violating rules fairly or unfairly. Who was your running mate? How did that selection process work? And how is working with him?
Yeah, my running mate was this guy named Jesse Guadiana, and he is still one of my very good friends. I'm going to his wedding in February. We still get together every time I go to Houston. So the way that that worked, it was a long process and I was very, once again, very serious. This was a very serious business. And so I thought a lot about who I wanted and I picked Jesse for two main reasons. The first is that I think he has interpersonal skills that I didn't necessarily have. I feel like I'm a good hang, I'm a good pal, I'm a good friend, but I don't actually love to manage people at all. It's not my strongest skill. And Jesse is just wonderful at managing people. So I really would say he was the glue of our team. And I picked him because I thought I needed someone with those skills because we were going to be managing a lot of people. And I'm good at making the to-do list, making the strategy, coming up with the big plan. But he was just invaluable in bringing everyone together, making sure everybody felt heard and was feeling good about the work we were doing. And then the other reason I picked him is he had really different experiences than me. He had been really involved in this umbrella organization called the Multicultural Engagement Center. He was really involved in the Latino community, had really been out there on the forefront of issues that I didn't necessarily, from my background, have the most perspective on. And I thought that together we would represent a well-rounded portion of the student body, right? If I had picked someone who had had a lot of the same experiences that I had, I just don't think that would have served the students as well as having someone who had a really different perspective on the issues people were facing.
Like she said, making sure that those voices are at the table. I feel like I'm the only one that has the track record of being able to work with those communities, and I know I can engage those communities to be a part of the student government because it's a student government for all students, not just a particular group.
Right. So, you know, I watched a few of your campaign videos, watched all of the campaign videos I could find on YouTube and the internet in preparation for our interview. And there were some things I found very interesting in that you have more concrete promises than your opposing candidates by a significant amount. And they were also more feasible. There was one about providing free transcripts. Oh, she says, can I say something? Oh, my God. I know it's not good to call
tiny blonde women cute, I should say, but you're really cute. Okay, that was so sweet, Paige. Thank you so much. I actually had to send a transcript to my new employer last week, and when I had to pay $20, I was infuriated. And I was like, if only I had been elected, this would be free. I mean, I sometimes feel like, how could one be so passionate about this? But I just think if your academic record that you paid $10,000 a year to earn, that they're going to make you pay for it. They used to be $10. I wanted to make them free. Now they're $20. I mean, I think this is madness and it's a horrible policy. I still wish that were changed.
I'll start with one that I think describing this will probably demonstrate that there's, I guess, research for the rest of them. So free transcripts. Right now, all of the money that is made from transcripts goes to pay the salaries for people in the registrar's office. So that's why there's that $10 fee. It can run anywhere from $125,000 to $200,000 every year. So the question is, how can you offset those costs to make transcripts free for students? So four options. First option, we just got a 3.1% tuition increase. If we could lobby for some of that money to be allocated to the registrar's office, that would be awesome. Two, UT is getting a new mainframe called SIS. Basically, the computer system that upholds all of our advising, accounting, and all of those different things is old and it's getting revamped and it has a huge budget, and we're hoping that we can move transcripts online, which is already in the works from Senate. And get them to be free that way because it gets rid of the labor cost associated. The third option is to have funds allocated through SSBC to cover the cost. And then the fourth option is maybe having your first five transcripts be free and maybe getting a smaller amount of money from one of the aforementioned.
Every time I have to pay for an official transcript, because by the way, there's an unofficial and an official transcript. And if you want to send it anywhere to a graduate school, to whatever employer, you have to pay for an official one each time. You cannot save it and then send it again. So, nice moneymaker for UT Austin.
This is the anthill I will die on. I really think transcripts should be free, and it is tyranny that they are not.
Yeah, drink to that. Okay, so first-generation college student, newer, bright, blonde, Kappa Kappa Gamma sorority. Sounds like a winning ticket. Honestly, I was shocked when your team did not win the election, because historically, people who look like you with your background and his background have always won at UT. Let's just take a step back. Who were your opponents and how many did you have? Like, who were the real competitors?
I think there were three other teams. There was the team that ultimately ended up winning, Kevin and Bina. Really lovely. Kevin was the president of Camp Texas, which is the incoming freshman camp that they do to let people get to know one another. So he definitely knew a lot of people from there. Bina was also in a sorority, and I think she was in the Business Council, which is a pretty big, influential organization. And then there was Jonathan Drawer, who was also in student government. And then his running mate was a woman named Delisa Shannon, who was on the POM squad at UT and actually is such a lovely person. I mean, very bright, smiley, very out there, was someone I think people knew. So our competition was definitely people with, I think, similarly engaged, active on campus. And then there was also every year the student alt weekly paper would run the parody team, which is amazing. And I love that because, yeah, make fun of everyone. Nothing was that serious. So those were the teams we were up against.
So what differentiated you from them, other than the very great platform of free transcripts, which, by the way, I'm surprised no one else, surprised that has not. Wow, your faces. I wish I had, like, video for my listeners. She looks, her body posture, she's unhappy. Yeah, we don't like that. Okay, so what differentiated you from these other candidates?
Totally. I mean, I'll start by saying I think all of them were really smart, nice people. I think we probably had a lot more in common than we had not in common. But I do think what differentiated us was I was the only one that had been in student government for more than a year, and Jesse had been very involved within other organizations. And I think we had both been, you know, making change on campus, or at least trying to, for a substantially longer period of time than everyone else. And as I mentioned at the beginning, one thing that I really loved about being in student government was getting to work with different stakeholders and different parts of the university to make things happen. And so I think that where we separated ourselves, and I think tried to throughout the campaign, was that we were the ones who really knew how to actually deliver on the things we were saying. We did have really specific platform points because we put a lot of time and energy and effort into making sure that if we told students we were going to do something, we actually thought it was feasible to do it, right? We weren't going to promise everyone a new Corvette and a puppy. We were like, let's make the transcripts free. Let's get an endowment for this particular program for sexual assault survivors, things like that. What an unsexy differentiator, but that's what I think, you know, we would differentiate ourselves by.
So our platform has 6 points. And I guess I can just list them because for brevity's sake, but free transcripts. We want to secure a permanent endowment for the Survivors Fund. We want to repeal certain city sound ordinances. We want to break UT's contract with Airmark. We want to create a free camp for first-generation college students. And we want to have more sustainable housing affordability initiatives.
I actually was looking back on old quotes at some point, and I found one where someone asked me about what I thought of the justices resigning or something, and I said, this is an act of corruption, and I was so serious, and it's honestly hilarious. And I'm like, I want to look back at 22-year-old Kaylin and be like, sister, let's calm down a little bit. I think maybe we lost the plot a little bit in those moments, but I think they're awesome quotes, and I love that I was so passionate.
Why calm down? I mean, it was serious election, serious feelings. Why would you tell your past self to tone it down?
It just wasn't that serious, right? I think one thing about being 22 years old is you literally lack perspective because you just haven't lived long enough to have it, to see the importance of this relative to the rest of your life or everything else that's going to happen in the world. And I think I was so in it. I was so serious. And it actually reminds me of this conversation I had with, oh my gosh, what was his name? John Daly, the communications professor. He taught this class called Interpersonal Communications, and he was known kind of as someone who would work with CEOs of companies on their communication. And I met with him before the election to talk about how I could message things. And he said, well, the two most important things that you should focus on are being competent and joyful. And he was like, and you seem to have the competent piece down, but maybe you should work on the joyful. And honestly, I think that's great advice. And I think I was pretty self-serious. And it's funny because in my personal life, I'm not particularly serious. I think most of my friends would say I'm sort of a silly person. And I think I took the issues so seriously. And while that's great, I don't think I should have ever toned it down in my approach to tackling the problems. I think I could have toned down the rhetoric a little bit. I'm not sure what end that was serving, but you're very kind. They were definitely statements spoken with a lot of conviction. And I am a very determined person. My mom always says that if I set my mind to something, everyone just needs to get out of the way because I will do it. And I do still have that drive, but I think perhaps with age, wine, and wisdom, we've become a little bit less dramatic. I love how dramatic it is, but I think we've become less dramatic in our proclamations about the stakes at hand in a given situation.
We are so committed to doing this. Anyone that knows me well knows that if I say I'm going to do something, come hell or freaking high water, I'm going to find a way to get it done. I'm so passionate about the university. I'm so passionate about service. I want to use my skills and my knowledge to make student government better for everyone, and I hope we get the chance to do it.
I can tell you if I needed a lawyer, you were the one I would go to. So, competent and joyful. At the time, I did hear some comparisons between you and Hillary Clinton. I don't know if I should say that, but I did hear that. Have you seen the movie Election?
Yes.
What are we missing? Tracy.
Ethics are rules of conduct.
Tracy Flick. I'd seen a lot of ambitious students come and go over the years, but Tracy Flick, she was a special case.
Some people say I'm an overachiever, but I think they're just jealous. My mom always tells me I'm different, you know, special. And if you look at all the things I've accomplished so far, I think you'd have to agree. Here I am as Hodel in Fiddler on the Roof.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, I'll bring the veil, you bring the groom.
Oh, and here I am on KCHS, our student-run TV station.
The littering must stop. Tracy Flick reporting.
But it was in the SGA, the Student Government Association, where I made my biggest mark. I never missed a single meeting, and I volunteered for every committee, as long as I could lead it.
I agree with Ashley. I think we should rent the barrels ahead of time, because what happened last time was a travesty. It was ridiculous, and I think it really reflected poorly on all of us.
Now Tracy Flick was poised to win the presidency of the student body. And so far, she was running unopposed.
Determined by a culture at a certain time in history.
Oh, there's one more thing about Tracy I think you should know.
Yeah, I think about my teenage self, and not in college, just my high school self. I identify in a lot of ways with her. You know, she's hardworking, determined, ambitious, and a little overzealous about where she was going. I recently watched the movie as an adult, and while I was listening to Matthew Broderick complain about her being successful, I remember feeling like she was unfairly villainized. What do you think about her, and why does America seem to have such a problem with ambitious and blonde women? I swear to God, whenever I read negative media press coverage about a woman politician, like 9 times out of 10, she is blonde. I don't know why. Maybe it's confirmation bias, but I feel like all the negative press I read, it's like pretty blonde women. Why?
I think, Paige, we do have to give credence to the 10th of the 10 stories, which is like Christy Nome shooting her dog.
She's a brunette. She deserved the criticism. I guess AOC gets a lot of hate and she's a brunette. But okay, it's like these women that are getting a lot of criticism in the media, I would say they're all pretty attractive, like reasonably attractive. They're just like sharp, ambitious, hardworking women. Why does America have such a problem with them?
So I always think, I'll just say it's sexism. That's what the problem is. And I would say the problem is not anyone is sitting there saying they are a woman, and so I will criticize them more harshly. And also, sexism isn't people walking into your office saying, I wish you would smile more, sweetheart. It's not, I think.
I mean, a professor at our university literally told you, be more joyful.
He did. And I think that was well-intentioned advice. No shade to John Daly. But people will take different things differently, but I do think that sometimes sexism is that overt, right? And sometimes it's even more nefarious and can get into more problematic ways. But I think most of sexism, and I think where it gets perhaps more, what's the word I'm looking for? Invasive or practically impacts people more in day-to-day life is not that sort of sexism, but rather the sort of implicit beliefs that we have about what women should do and how they should organize their lives or represent themselves in public. And the prevailing societal idea of women is, you know, you're supposed to be, especially in Texas, and you grew up in Texas as well, I think, is you're supposed to be a nice girl. You're supposed to be very, you know, agreeable, quiet. You know, it's nice if you have your dreams or your ambitions, but ultimately you're supposed to be a wife, mother, etc. And I think operating from that sort of default point of view, when a woman says, put me in charge of things, and not only that, put me in charge of the highest office, right? You know, people will say Hillary Clinton shrill, Kamala Harris seems mean. And it's like before they ran for these offices, nobody was saying those things about them. And no one is interrogating within themselves, why am I making that judgment about that person? Is it perhaps something I am saying because of this incongruous alignment between what I think a woman should be and what this person is asking me to do? And I think brunettes, Republicans, Democrats, uggos, hotties, whoever you are, if you're a woman trying to run for an elected office, I do think there is a struggle for every woman about who runs for office to figure out how to portray themselves in a way that people can digest, that is both aligned with their ideas of what women should be while also operating within the context of doing something, running for office, that is inherently not feminine. And so I think it's this sort of latent sexism that really animates the problem facing women running for office. And I really don't think that's confined to any subset of women or any political identity. I think all women running for elected office run up against that tension.
Yeah, your running mate, Jesse, is very tall, very, very tall, and a man. Some would even say he's a future tall man with a giant watch. Do you think if he had been the presidential candidate and he'd been the VP, do you think that would have impacted anything?
I mean, probably, right? I feel like I can't really fully play Monday morning quarterback on that, but I would say I think people tend to be more comfortable with men being at the top of the ticket, you know? And I think, again, I don't think it's an overt thing. I think if you asked 9 out of 10 people, not Kristi Noem and her dog killing self, but everyone else, you ask them, you know, are you more comfortable with a man versus a woman, no one's going to say yes. Everyone's going to say, of course, there should be a woman president. Of course, women should be running for office. It's not that anyone actively holds in their mind that women shouldn't be doing these things. It's that their implicit biases impact the way they make those decisions. And I think it's really hard to look within yourself and say, oh, am I doing this because I'm racist? Am I doing this because I'm sexist? I don't think anyone wants to believe that they're operating from any sort of bigoted place, whatever, you know, it is they're being discriminatory against. But I do think it's really important along different ideological identity lines to be honest with ourselves about those things, because I think that's how we make progress and get the kind of holistic representation in government, right? Government is supposed to represent people, whether that's the student body, whether that's the state of Texas or a particular district of Congress. And I think the only way we can achieve a truly representative government in general is if people are willing to have kind of those more difficult, honest conversations within themselves. Just be reflective. You're not a bad person if you did something because you were operating from a sexist place. You're a bad person if you don't acknowledge that and don't change your behavior after having some ability to gauge that reaction. That's what I think.
I really do think you're a born politician. You're so skilled, even in just casual conversation, with giving very accurate but also non-offensive answers. So we talked about who your opponents were and what they believed and what differentiated you. What were the issues that faced UT Austin at the time of your campaign? So this is 2016. This is when Trump was running. This is when there were all of those very interesting things in the news about Dreamers and DACA. Racial tensions are not as high then as they were in 2020, but I don't know, I was starting to feel some stuff on campus. Just tell me about it.
Yeah, I think there were elements of that. And that was part of why I ran with Jesse. There had been this frat party. Don't even remember what house it was with, but they had it was somehow border patrol, border crossing themed. And Jesse led a protest against that party. And so I think that was stoking some tension at the time. I think, I don't know if you remember this, but that was the semester that Haruka Weiser was murdered on campus by a stalker.
Yes, and God bless you for getting her name correct. I didn't know her personally, but some of my friends were friends with her, and they were like, Paige, they're not pronouncing her name right anywhere. So just wanted to say thanks for saying her name right.
Totally. As a fellow gal with a hard name to pronounce, solidarity on that one. No, yeah, that was really serious. And I think that was something that women on campus, I mean, a lot of us could resonate with, sort of, you know, having someone who's giving you unwanted attention. And obviously for her, that culminated in such a tragic way that I think you couldn't help but take notice of. So definitely those were some of the more serious things that were going on. Of course, there was the scourge of transcript fees. There were also things like access to mental health resources. There were not as many bus routes from neighborhoods where students of color lived to get to campus, and that was causing issues. So I think a lot of things that are, you know, small fry things that face university students, and then some of the bigger, you know, larger societal trends of the time, racial tensions, you know, sexual violence against women. I mean, there were real issues facing students insofar as, you know, you're 22, 20, whatever, you're not an adult, but very real problems can be very real for people at that age. And yeah, that was the campus world we were living in.
I think that our campaign is different in that I have so much policy knowledge about, you know, what goes on at UT. It was so funny. We were talking about putting up an exhibit somewhere, and they were like, you have to call facilities. And I was like, get Susan on the phone. And I think that if you have to spend 6 months getting up to date about, you know, what are the relevant interests on all those committees, then you're going to do a disservice to students. And I think that additionally, I think Jesse offers perspectives that have not traditionally been in the conversation. Year to year, people talk about recruiting people from more diverse backgrounds, not just spirit life, not just Greek life. And I think when you couple institutional knowledge with perspectives that so badly need to be included, you have the potential to do something really special for a lot of people who maybe haven't been impacted by student government.
So thinking about yourself at the time and all of the things that you hope to accomplish, if you were to have one, how successful do you feel like you would have honestly been in enacting those campaign promises, just knowing what you know about student government?
What I will say is, so we actually did accomplish one of our biggest points that actually has to do with Haruka. So I really did care a lot about certain issues. And after I lost, part of why I was so upset was that I thought I have all these great ideas. I really didn't know how to accomplish them and they weren't going to get done. And I was meeting with a mentor of mine, Mark Music, who was at the time the dean of students for the College of Liberal Arts. He actually might have just been the dean of the college at the time. And I had worked for him throughout college. And he is a wonderful man that I can't say enough good things about. But he was asking me, you know, called me into his office after we lost and said, you know, Kaylin, you're feeling really upset. Talk to me about it. And I sort of explained what I just said to him. You know, I feel like I have all these things. And he's like, what's one of the platform points that you could still do anyway? You don't need an office to make a difference. What do you want to do? And so basically there was this organization called Voices Against Violence on campus, and they had a thing called the Survivors Emergency Fund. So if you were a student at UT who experienced sexual or domestic violence and you needed money to change the locks on your apartment, you needed to get a rape kit, you needed to pay for storage fees to move out of a dangerous situation, you could call on the Voices Against Violence organization's Survivors Emergency Fund. And basically every year that fund was, I guess, funded through one-off donations. Different student organizations would host fundraisers. And basically, one of our platform points was to create a sustained endowment for that fund so that it would produce income that survivors could access rather than being super variable year to year, dependent on how much the, you know, Tejas Chili Cook-Off raised that year, which is an awesome organization. And those guys were also really dedicated to supporting that fund. And so Dean Music was like, well, why don't you just do that anyway? And so me and Jesse talked to all the student organizations that were doing fundraisers for the fund that semester. And we're like, instead of giving the money directly to the fund, would you be willing to direct your donations toward an endowment? And we did this fundraising campaign and I guess called a bunch of university donors and different faculty members and ended up raising enough money to make a solvent endowment. So the Voices Against Violence Survivors Emergency Fund, I think to this day, is still sustained by that endowment. So I do think a lesson on just amazing mentorship. I think that was very important for me. I've heard someone say before that reputation is what other people think about you, but integrity and character is what you do when no one's paying attention. And so I think for me, there had been so much negative press coverage during the election. And a lot of people, I think, had this impression that much like Tracy Flick or Hillary Clinton or whoever else people might malign, folks were like, oh, she's just so ambitious and blah, blah, blah. And I think for me, that was really personally affirming to complete that point anyway, because just one, it matters. And especially after Haruka's death, I was really troubled by the fact that this wasn't a more potent resource for students on campus. And I think second of all, just to be like, no, this is why I was in this. This is what I really wanted to do. And to be able to make a difference like that anyway was a really meaningful thing to me, to reaffirm my own values of really making a difference. And so I guess to answer the broader question, I think we would have been really effective at completing our points. And again, we on the front end didn't put anything into the platform that we didn't think we could accomplish. And although I would not use the phrase that I use then, you know, come hell or high water, I'm gonna get it done, I think I wouldn't say that exactly the same way today, but I do think that sentiment's true. And I think we would have delivered on the things that we wanted. Of course, Kevin and Bina ended up winning, and they got some really cool things done for the university as well. They got different mental health resources available on campus. So, you know, it's not zero sum, right? Like lots of different people have different things they can bring to the table. So I'm not like the university is worse because we didn't win, but I do think we would have accomplished the things that we said we were going to. And I don't think I would have paid that $20 when I sent my employer my transcript last week. So yeah, I think we would have gotten a lot done.
Say your opponents who want to accomplish some good things for the university. What good things did they accomplish? I don't remember any.
I actually do. I'm the worst. So I was raised by a woman who wouldn't, you know, if someone at school was giving me a hard time or was like speaking badly about me, you'd come home and I'd be like, Mom, so-and-so said this about me. And my mom would be like, I wonder what's going on in their lives. And I think that kind of is the perspective I come from. Like, I really am loath to be negative about people, but I think that they did. They had a mind-body lab that they created. So I know that's at least one thing I can definitively say that they did. And I do think they got more resources allocated out of the student budget, like towards mental health. And that's really important and obviously something that has only become more important as time goes on. So I think that's great. And I think also, I think Kevin, his personal narrative, he was very transparent about his personal experience having Tourette's. And I think that that was probably really powerful for different students who might also have Tourette's or even just have any kind of difference that makes them feel like, oh, I couldn't be speaking in front of people all the time, or I couldn't necessarily do something. I think to have someone in a position that's very visible with a difference like that is really powerful and meaningful for people. So even if I can't sit here and be like, here are the 95 things, not to say they didn't do 95 things, it's just it's been 10 years and I don't fully remember, but I do think there are really powerful, wonderful things that can come from the type of representation that they offered as well.
I do remember your campaign. I'm saying this honestly, not because you are in front of me.
Eating a cookie.
Eating a cookie. Yeah, I treat my guests well, everybody. I was really excited about your campaign because of the campaign promise you made about sexual assault survivors. I actually didn't know you'd managed to accomplish it anyway. But I remember I was really excited about that. And I was really annoyed with the Hellgren's whole tell your story thing. Again, he's a really nice person. The few interactions I've had with him, which are so small, he probably doesn't remember me. If he listens to this, he might think I'm super weird. He's a really nice person. But the other campaign had this thing. It was like, share your story. Everyone's got a story. And my whole Facebook news feed was just filled with thousands of people posting their life stories, their sob stories with the hashtag. I forget what. Do you remember the hashtag?
I think it was just share your story.
Yeah. I just found it so annoying. Weird, because I do a podcast where I just basically tell people stories. So I feel like that's why he won.
Yeah, I do too. I think it was brilliant. I think to get back to John Daly's point and maybe to tie a couple of threads together, the thing that I cared about was that I could get a lot done. And that was the thing that I honed in on and expressed over and over throughout different campaign speeches and different presentations. And I think the fact of the matter was most people didn't care about student government and what it could do because most people don't really care about what government can do either. It's like, do we like this person? Will we get a beer with them? What's the vibe? And I think what Kevin did that was so smart was center people rather than like the things he hoped to accomplish. And I'm not sure who on their team came up with that idea, but I think it was brilliant. And I do think it's really contributed to their success. It's hard to say that's why they won when in the end the race was so close. There's this sentiment in government actual campaigns that when you win, you incorrectly sanctify everything you did right. And when you lose, you incorrectly crucify everything you did as totally wrong. So I don't want to give too much weight to their approach versus our approach because the election was so close. But I do think it was great. And I think it resonated with people. And yeah, kudos to whoever on their team came up with that. I hope you work in marketing now. It's brilliant.
So speaking about marketing, press coverage, what kind of press coverage did you get and how did you feel about it? Want some more wine?
No, I don't need more wine. I got a lot of really bad press coverage. I think that was what prompted you to want to talk about this in the first place, because I did get really bad press coverage, and it would be things like a lot of really ominous titles, like there are questions surrounding the records of the presidential candidates. And then there would be a picture of only me, and it would be like the worst picture ever. And I would be like, do I even look like that? My goodness. And then the statements within the piece would mischaracterize things. We actually ended up at the end having a person on our team whose sole job it was to send corrections to the Daily Texan, because they would do things like, I remember one of our platform points, or not platform points, but one of our messaging points was, nobody else in this race, although they've been in student government, has passed a single piece of legislation. They haven't accomplished anything through their roles when they've been in student government. And I had put forth these 6, 7, 8 things. I don't remember the exact number. The student paper and the article about it, I guess, misrepresented how many times I had passed legislation or what my record was. And, you know, another example, I talked to you earlier about that funny chili pepper costume that I wore to a complaint hearing. The school paper was there at that hearing and took pictures, but when they wrote a story about all the complaints, they used one of me looking really sad at a different hearing rather than my funny Chili Pepper costume. And it was just sort of like, what the heck? You guys are really just hammering this in. And, you know, I think student reporting, there are limitations there. Let's have grace for everyone in this story. Everyone's like 19 years old. But the fact that they would have those ominous headlines and then only have photos of me that were the most atrocious photos ever, I remember feeling kind of like, what the heck? But, you know, of course, on the other hand, I knew going into the race that, you know, you're putting yourself out there. You have to know that you're going to be subject to a certain amount of scrutiny. And I think that's fair. And that's totally within the right of anybody to cover what you're doing, to have a story, or to not be on your side all the time. That's totally fine. And I never felt bad about myself for the coverage. Like, I never had a thought of, oh gosh, I'm not good at what I'm doing, or I've misrepresented things. I always just kind of felt like, what the heck, this is kind of unfair. And the pictures were just so bad. They were so bad. And I'm like, I'm not a heinous looking person, but you wouldn't know that based on, and it would be like the front page of the school paper, you know, how a newspaper you fold it in half and people will say, oh, above the fold. It was like the top half of the fold all around campus would just be like me looking angry with a microphone. And it was like, what in the world? So yeah, that was uncool. Didn't love that, to say the least.
Yes, I remember that. That is actually why. It's going to sound really weird. That's actually why. So I, at the time, was very apolitical to UT student government. Like, I just didn't care. But I remember seeing one of those covers. It's going to sound so terrible. You can't get mad at me for saying this, okay? Okay, Helen is an extremely beautiful person. Like, sitting across from me, she looks pretty much 22 at the time. Like, gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous girl. I didn't know who you were. I didn't know what you looked like. I just remember opening up the Daily Texan and being like, they are not running an attractive Greek life person. I like saw stuff on you on Facebook and I was like, she's really beautiful. Why did they get that picture of her? And then I saw more of the unattractive picture. I just didn't get it. I like voted for you because of that. Like, I mentioned the sexual assault thing. I was surprised. But that was why I got interested in your campaign, because I was like, they're smearing this girl. She does not look like this. Why are they doing this? I thought there might have been someone at the Daily Texan you'd have some kind of conflict with, because they were bad pictures. They looked photoshopped. They did not look like her.
Justice for hot people. You know, Paige, justice for hot girls. I actually don't think I'm super photogenic in general, but these pictures were like beyond. They were so bad.
I mean, I think you're photogenic. The pictures you had in other parts for your campaign, because yeah, I saw that picture, I Googled it, and there were other ones of you that popped up, and I was like, oh, she's pretty. And I thought maybe someone at the Daily Texan, I was like, okay, someone either has it out for sorority girls, which is totally possible, or someone there really has an agenda against her. Why were they running such awful photos of you? Why?
I really can't speculate. And to my knowledge, I didn't have a crazy feud with anyone on the Daily Texan. I'd actually worked at the Daily Texan in years past as an opinion columnist. I don't think anyone had a vendetta to my knowledge, but the pictures were really bad. And I'm glad that we can set the record straight today that I'm not heinously ugly.
No one thinks you are. So speaking about negative press coverage, at the time, you were 22, an age where most of us are struggling with our identities, emotional regulation levels, and more. Can you describe the process of seeing the media and all the press coverage? Because you kept a pretty brave face. And that was something I heard from a lot of people also. They all talked about how you handled everything with grace, class, and style. I'll be honest, if someone ran a photo like that of me, I would have been at that office 6 a.m. demanding they publish a retraction. I would have been mad. I was actually mad on your behalf. Walk me through your experience, because I'm sure it was very different than the face you were putting on for everyone else.
To be totally honest, I don't think that it was. I have, for whatever reason, maybe we credit my parents, I'm not sure. I just have a pretty strong sense of myself. And I guess it's like that picture, for example. Yeah, it wasn't great, but I didn't stay up at night thinking about it, because it's like I look in the mirror every day. I know what I actually look like. And I think that same sentiment I can kind of carry over to everything else. It's like, if people are saying negative things about you, whether it's in a, you know, in the student paper or behind your back, I think that's something everyone 22 faces on some level, obviously on the scale that it was happening, just some reference for the listeners. I mean, the UT student body is like 50,000 people. Like I mentioned earlier, I think more people voted in our election than voted in the Texas House election that year. So it is a high degree of publicity. But I think for me, it's like, if I know who I am, what anyone else has to say about that, just it doesn't even compute. It doesn't really affect me. Of course, I care what other people think insofar as it's going to help you get towards or away from a goal. And I certainly care what people I really respect think, right? If a really good friend of mine told me you were really unkind in that particular interaction, or someone I thought, you know, my boss or something was saying, you know, you didn't really put enough effort into that. Those are things I would take really seriously. But if someone doesn't know me personally or I don't have a high degree of respect for them already, I'm just going to trust my own perception of myself over what anyone else says. So I would say, you know, the press coverage, I was like, this is unfortunate as a tactical matter for our campaign, but I never felt bad about myself personally because of it. And again, I don't really know why that is, other than maybe just my parents did something right. So shout out mom and dad, thank you. And I do think you have to have a thick skin if you're gonna run for something like that. And I certainly do. So yeah, I guess that's how I felt about it.
Yeah, shout out to Kaylin's parents. You did a really great job. Did the loss impact your mood, relationships, schoolwork? Not just the last, but the whole presidential election. Just tell me, how did that impact your life? It seemed very intense.
To the grades piece, yeah, I think I dropped half my classes that semester, but I think I triaged pretty well. I think I had like a B and an A in my two classes I didn't drop. Personal relationships, yeah, I mean, they did suffer in the sense of, because all of my attention was so focused on running this race, you know, it was senior year. All my friends were kind of doing fun senior year things, and I didn't really get to be a part of that because I was so focused on this other thing. And then I think there's a certain level of it that's just like, people are sick of hearing from you, right? One aspect of student government campaigns at UT was that people would make their Facebook profile pictures your campaign sign, and we had to ask people to vote through this link, and we would reach out to them, and there was three rounds of elections, and I think people were just really tired of us. I think I expended every bit of social capital that I had. After we lost the election, I was so sad. I couldn't leave my room. I had lost all this weight. I was so upset that we lost for the different reasons we talked about earlier. But my best friend from high school went to UT also, and she's amazing. Love her so much. She was like, Kaylin, after like 2 weeks had come by, she was like, we got to get you out of here. First of all, Roundup is next week, which was the big UT Greek life party week. She was like, look, go get a haircut. Go get a spray tan, go get a cute outfit. We're gonna just put you back together. I go get my hair cut, I'm crying. We go shopping to get a new outfit, I'm crying. I finally am kind of getting it together before this spray tan. And basically, like, part of what was so hard is every time I would go outside of my apartment, people would be like, I voted for you, I'm so sorry. And it was just like, God, you know, it's not like you lose and nobody really knows and you can move on. It's like, you've just lost in front of 50,000 people. You had a couple thousand people change their profile pictures to your face and you really put yourself all out there and you just didn't work out. And now everybody is like having a little pity party for you. And that's just like, that sucks, right? And you're reminded of it everywhere you go. But finally, by the time I go to this spray tan, I'm kind of getting it together. I'm like, we look cute. Fine. I get to the spray tan, and I don't know if you've ever had a spray tan page. No. But lovely, beautiful skin. I always say I look presidential if I'm a little orange. But anyways, so I go to the spray tan. And part of how this goes down is like, you can be in any level of clothing, right? You could be in a swimsuit. You could be totally naked if you wanted. You know, we're a modest in-betweener. We're usually, you know, at least a little bit covered, and we were a little bit covered, but it's still fairly exposed, right? So I go into the spray tan, and this woman is spraying me with a spray bottle, and she is like right up in my business. And she goes, I told my manager I wouldn't say this, but I voted for you. And I was like, dude, I'm really exposed right now. I just didn't even know what to say to her. And you're just standing there like spread eagle, just like, what? And it was so funny and so horrible. And I still laugh about it to this day.
I hope they gave you a free tan. Yeah, I've never gotten a spray tan. I would love to be tan. I just don't look very good tan. Like, my, you know, I just don't. I wish I did. So it sounds like you had, you know, a bit of a rough period following the loss of the election. That's understandable. I mean, you were so passionate. You had goals you wanted to achieve, and you were treated in an extremely unfair way. And when I say that, the only time I have seen, I would say, in my 4 years at UT, and then, you know, you'd like read stuff after it. The only time I saw press coverage as negative as the one for Kaylin was like, gonna censor his name, it was like, and he got like addicted to crack or cocaine. There was a whole drug bust. That was the only time I saw press coverage that was as negative as the press coverage you got. And obviously, you did not do anything bad to warrant that. So you're going through all of these negative emotions following the loss of this election. What got you out of it? What was the recovery process like? Can you walk me through that?
Totally. And again, it feels silly because like 30-year-old me wants to look at 22-year-old me and be like, it's okay, girlfriend, don't worry about it. But of course, this is something that you've put yourself out there, and it is embarrassing and hard to really put yourself out there like that with so many people, especially your friends, and to have it not work out. But a couple things. I mean, first, I think the thing that was so hard about it is that at every other point in my life, if something didn't work out, like all of us are told all the time from when we're little that if you want something to happen, you can make it happen. And I would say for the most part, not that I had any kind of record of superlative success, but you know, when I didn't win something, I could say, oh, you know, I didn't practice enough or I didn't rehearse enough before that audition. I was a big theater kid in school. And this was the first time where I had a situation where I had done my best and I had full court pressed. I had done everything right, I thought, and to this day, there's not much I think I could have changed or done differently to have gotten a different result. And so you kind of have to contend with, what does this say about me versus what is circumstantial here? And with this election or anything of a magnitude of, you know, you've got 13,000 people voting, there's so many things that are beyond your control. And I think it was difficult for me to say, I lost, got all this negative press coverage, people had strong opinions one way or the other. And it was just hard to say, oh gosh, you know, if I can't really point to what I did wrong, do I just, is something wrong with me? Or did I, you know, not portray myself well? Was I in this for the wrong reasons? Am I just super craven and ambitious? And you start to have those conversations with yourself. And I think what got me out of it is the same thing that gets anybody out of any hard situation. It's just time, perspective, therapy. Shout out to all of my therapists. I think I keep the lights on at those establishments. I love therapy, big proponent of it. And yeah, I think just over time, doing things to affirm who you are. And I think when you have something happen that doesn't work out in your favor, I think it's important not to take it all to heart and not to say, I'm a horrible person or I'm not hardworking. Not to let other people's opinions of you shake your foundation or the narrative you tell about yourself. But I also think at the same time, it is problematic not to consider those things, right? You have to be able to be honest with yourself and say, okay, I've received this criticism. Do I think that's true? And then looking at the things to compare and contrast and then make up your own mind. But I think if you let all the criticism rock you, you're never going to be able to pick yourself back up. But at the same time, if you don't figure out which bits of it you think are true, you're also not going to improve. And so I think what's very important is to whatever side of things you come out on after having an honest conversation with yourself, considering negative inputs, is to just change or live with it and not dwell on things for too long. But I mean, when the election was over, I moved to Iowa to work on a campaign. And then I moved to Washington, D.C. And I stayed away from Texas for 3 years. I just didn't want to be around people who knew me from that election. I didn't want to talk about it. And again, I'm a rando. I'm a lay person. You know, I've not written a book. I've not done anything that anyone in the public would ever acknowledge. But it's like, you know, I had a lot of success in my career in D.C. I had a lot of success in law school. I've had a lot of success in, you know, my career since then. And eventually you just hit a point over time where you realize the secret sauce is me, right? these good things are happening because I do have certain skills, and maybe your goals get adjusted to the things that you are more adept at through those conversations of times where you lose. But I always say life can't get worse if you get better. So I think interrogating your losses and then learning from them and building yourself up after them is a really empowering, great thing. And you just gotta stay confident in who you are. And that's all you can really do.
That's very beautiful. So speaking about interrogating your losses, there's so many different parts of the election that were unfair and strange and dirty and fraudulent. There was a video of the student government where the justices resigned.
I didn't know the justices were going to resign. Yeah, I mean, it sucks. I think that it's really unfortunate that anything got to a point where people felt like they had to resign. I wish this process had been different.
I really valued the learning experience on it, really thought that the Assembly and student government appreciated the impartiality and independence of the Supreme Court, and I haven't found that to be the case. So I also resigned from my position as Interim Chief Justice.
So I actually laughed and clapped a lot when all of the justices resigned. I thought that was hilarious. It was very much like a reality television show, which I really enjoy. And then the whole exec board essentially were like, yeah, we agree with them. Like, this is a very shitty process, and what's happening is unfair to everyone.
We just lost basically an entire branch of our student government, and it's a damn shame. I agree with those who resigned.
Very interesting stuff. Why did the justices resign? Bizarre thing to happen.
Yeah, and I don't know if we fully covered this earlier, but to the listeners, basically, when all the rule violations happened, the school employed a law professor to review all of the ultimate dispositions of the complaint, and they basically overturned everything the Supreme Court did. And the Supreme Court was really unhappy about that, and so they all resigned in mass protest of their reversals.
The feedback from other people in the student body government was interesting. There was one guy who stood up and he was like, this is such a decision. It was not clear to me who he was talking about. Like, what was the sentiment around the Supreme Court justices resigning? How did the whole government body take it?
I honestly really don't remember.
God, this just seems like it was so much drama and stress. It makes me wonder, Kaylin, do you regret running?
I have given that question so much thought, and this is where I land. I don't think it was wrong of me to run. I love the part of myself that just goes for things. I think I had every reason to think I was the front runner. I would say by all accounts, I was a front runner. Everybody that had been involved in student government that worked for a campaign worked for me. I think everybody kind of thought we were the natural front runners sort of situation. But I think on balance, there were a lot of costs to running, and it was a really difficult thing for a 22-year-old to go through. And it's difficult to say that I regret it, because you never know in sort of the intangible ways how an experience like that impacts you in a way that makes you able to do things later down the line. And so I don't regret it insofar as I have a lot of grace for myself at that time and the things I was doing, even if I was giving really dramatic quotes to the school paper. But I don't know that it was a good thing for me. And so I don't know if I regret it or not, and I'm inclined to say that I don't. But the thing I will say is I have never run for an elected position in a club, professional organization, in real government since then, and I don't think I ever would again.
Really?
Yeah, no, I just think the personal cost was too high. And I don't need to be in charge that bad. It just doesn't seem worth it. Yeah, I don't know. That's just kind of how I left feeling about it. Like, it's funny, earlier in this, you were like, you're just such a great politician, but I really, like, have no interest in running for anything.
Yeah, I mean, I know you sounded really shocked, but you are natural leader. Even the way you're sitting, very alpha, the way you've been speaking about everything before our interview, you have a very, I would say, naturally professional way of speaking. If I were going to pick out, you know, in a lineup, in a crowd of people, someone I thought had a leadership personality, it would be you. But it sounds like law school clubs, I don't know, law school student body government. Is that what it's called? Law school? Law school student body, I don't know what it's called. I'm not a lawyer, obviously. Although I do like to interrogate people. baking clubs, PTA, you'll never run again?
No, I don't think so. But it's not all sad, Paige. I do still have big dreams, specifically. I think that if I'm honest with myself, what I think my talents are and what I think they're not, I don't like managing people, and I don't like telling people what to do. I think I am a really effective communicator. I'm good at writing. I think I can take complex ideas and break them down in a way that makes sense. I'm a very hard worker. So my working dream for my life is to be a law professor, civil rights attorney, and my biggest dream is to be a legal analyst on a major news network. I think I would be a tremendous news anchor, tremendous legal analyst, and I still love attention and I love talking to people. So I'm not saying that I want to go be a hermit in Siberia by any means, although respect to the hermits in Siberia. But I think the kind of scrutiny you put yourself under when you run for elected office, just like speaking for myself personally, I just don't think it's worth it. And I would also say I worked for a member of Congress and I worked on a lot of different campaigns, mostly U.S. House races. I love campaigns. I think it's so much fun to have kind of a zero-sum environment. I did not like working on the Hill. I did not like working in bigger legislative bodies because it takes so much to enact even the smallest change. And I just don't find that very fulfilling. I mean, maybe it could be fulfilling to be like a county commissioner or a comptroller or something local where you could have more impact in a tangible way. But I think on balance, being in any kind of elected office is just not super appealing to me at this point. And I think largely because of that experience.
That's so interesting. I mean, I can't say I blame you. I'm so self-conscious that if something like that happened to me, if I was dragged through the mud, raked over the coals, fake photos of me looking like a gremlin were posted in newspapers everywhere, I don't think I'd run again for anything. But you are a resilient person. You're a strategic person. You're a smart person. You're an attractive person. You would be the front runner for many elections. I guess it just, I don't know, it makes me kind of sad that you're not running again. Although, again, I do understand why. I am a little shocked.
Yeah, I think that's understandable. And I guess one thing I will say is I don't think it's embarrassing to lose. I don't feel bad about myself because I did. I think it's cool to care about stuff. I think it's cool to go for things. Life is short. We're all just little ants flying around on a planet. Like, go for the things that you care about. I think that is so cool. But I think everybody just kind of has to make a call for themselves of like what's worth it and what's not. And I think for me, it's just like, yeah, I'm good. I don't need to subject myself to scrutiny on that level. And obviously, like, student government at UT is not like, it's not the US Congress. Like, you're not running for literal president. But I, now having seen a lot of campaigns from that angle and seeing what candidates go through.
Well, just for the record, you don't seem embarrassed or ashamed of having run. I will still remember this. Again, not very involved with student body government. Just your campaign, the way people talked about and treated you in the media was just so heinous. I remember there was this photo you posted of you and your running mate, and you're both wearing glasses, and you look very chic. You look very cool. He does too. You guys look great. You wrote this, and you were like, I couldn't be ashamed if I tried. And you were talking about all of the things that went right in your race and how proud you were of it. I just remember thinking, wow, she is so graceful. That was like the first thing I said to you, I think. I was like, you look and act like Grace Kelly, just because you were so poised, you were so put together. I would have never guessed that you stayed in your room for like weeks after the election. You were just really impressive. So I guess if you're not running again, that's your choice. I understand. I'm just saying it. It's been kind of sad because you are a leader. You are an attractive blonde leader. And
Paige, do you want to take me to dinner?
No, I'm very straight. For someone else who's maybe in your shoes, who's lost an election or something they really cared about publicly, what advice would you give them to handle it with grace and class, even if they are really not feeling that way? Honestly, a lot of the stuff you told me is coming as a genuine shock to me, that you were like crying or having negative emotions and lost weight, that you wouldn't run for anything again. That's shocking. The face you put on, the way you portrayed yourself, and what I heard from other people was all, she's so graceful, she's so classy, she's doing such a great job with this. It's a little shocking that there's something else going on behind the scenes.
Let the record also reflect I am a human being with normal emotions. What advice I would give It is not embarrassing to lose, but it is embarrassing to be a whiny loser baby about it. It is. My grandmother, who I am named after and I think the world of, said to me when I lost a track meet in sixth grade, she said, "Honey, you can't always win, but you can always be the happiest loser." And I think that's true, right? Like, life is changing. Life isn't winning all the time. And when you lose is when you sit on the sidelines. When you lose is when you're not going after things that speak to you. And so it's like, okay, you went for something and it didn't work out for you. Dude, that means you're in the game. That means that you're playing. And if you just keep going and you keep learning, you will eventually get a W. And sometimes losses will teach you what games you don't want to play anymore. And that's fine. And that's not embarrassing. That's not bad. That's just part of learning about who you are and what you're about. And it's like, we all only get one life on this planet, unless you believe in reincarnation, in which case, shout out, very cool. But like, it's just not that serious. It's just not that big of a deal. Go forth. Do what you want to do. Lose. Lose publicly and just don't be a loser about it. Be the happiest loser and everything will be fine.
Well, Kaylin, I just say you're playing a beautiful game and it makes me sad you don't want to be the main character. Thank you so much for coming on my show and for telling me all this interesting stuff about the inner workings of that very fraught 2016 student body presidential election. Justice for Tracy Flick.
Justice for hot girls and for Christy Gnome's dog.
All right, everybody, that's all the time we have. Thank you for listening.
I'd be remiss if, for one last time, I didn't take this opportunity to thank my fellow members of the Election Supervisory Board. They went so far above and beyond the call of duty in this entire process. I've been so impressed by the hard work and time that they've put into this. 836 students participated. And your new student body president and vice president with 51.03% of the vote, Kevin Helgren and transition will take place next Tuesday and inauguration will be next Sunday.
Yeah, not only the students, but our team. We literally couldn't have done any of this without them. Right? Our parents, our siblings, they've all been so incredibly supportive.
Yeah. We couldn't have done it. I mean, we're just two people.
Yeah.
No, we got victory.
In my quiet house of a heart, started betting again on my playing cards. Old habits I try to quit, they die so hard. But when I walk towards you all of the time, but I hope you keep me close and inside your mind, where the storms do roll, but it's the same as mine. So sailing on the days when the wind don't blow, and I take it as a sign. much at all, but I know that I love you and it's kind of your fault. I've been gambling dice, I've been staying up all night, I've been falling asleep with all of the lights and my clothes on. Don't wanna walk the dog in the morning. And when I wake, it's you.
Quiet house of a heart.